You did get to see some interesting teams with the Giants. I think 82 is one that I always like to talk about, and it comes down to the finale weekend with the Dodgers, and Joe Morgan hits a huge home run that knocked the Dodgers out eventually.
Well, it was kind of a turning point in a way, because that was Frank Robinson's first year as manager with the Giants, and it also was the year that brought Joe Morgan to the Giants. And here were two people who were used to better things as players. In other words, 500 wasn't good enough for them. They were used to winning. And they kind of brought that attitude, which was sorely needed out here at that time. And it caught on. Certainly did that year. I mean, the Giants carried the race down to the last weekend. It was a three-team race with the Dodgers and the Atlanta Braves in the Western Division. And the Giants lost the Friday night game to the Dodgers, which kind of knocked them for a loop. They lost on Saturday as well. But on Sunday, while the Dodgers still had a chance, the Giants rose up and beat the Dodgers and knocked them out the final day of the season on that memorable home run that Joe Morgan hit off Terry Forster.
What was it in the experience of working with Frank Robinson? Because we still see the first black manager, tough man. I mean, he would get into fights. Eddie Matthews decked him one time. He crowded the plate. He was an MVP with the Orioles. He changed the city of Baltimore, really, when he got there. Tough man with Cincinnati in 56, Rookie of the Year. But here he is, a major league manager, Frank Robinson. What was that like?
Well, the thing I liked about Frank is that he was a tough guy, you know, and he wanted to win. That's really the only thing that mattered to him. And I liked that. He did not suffer fools gladly. You know, you ask him a stupid question, you know, that was not very good, you know, or something obvious. And I said to him one day, you know, after a game, I went in the clubhouse and I said, "You know, Frank, this game is tough enough to broadcast without trying to figure out what the hell you're doing down there." And, you know, he looked at me and he just loved it, you know, because if you give it back to him, he loved that, you know. And so we got along quite well. And, you know, it's funny, a few years later, he was at Baltimore and I was in New York and with the Yankees. And he said, so we're playing each other, and I'm on the field before the game, and Frank comes over, and he says, "Well, they get rid of you and me, and now they start winning."
Well, eventually they did. You were there in 86 with the Giants, and I'll ask you, who was your partner in 86? But 86 was the transition year. Roger Craig comes in, Al Rosen, Will Clark. Who were you working with, and what was it like seeing that this big transition for the Giants?
I was working with a guy named Phil Stone, and who occasionally showed up. And, but
the mayor, isn't he the mayor somewhere?
No, that was David Glass.
David Glass
I worked with for 5 years before that.
Okay.
He's now mayor of Petaluma.
Okay,
But Phil Stone was a TV guy, and radio was kind of foreign. But anyway, it was another turning point because. From a player standpoint, because it was a rookie year of Will Clark, and Robbie Thompson came up that year. Matt Williams played somewhat that year. But these, again, were guys who were used to better things. And they brought that attitude to the ball club. And Al Rosen as a GM, of course, had a great career as a player, an MVP, played in the World Series, was a GM with the Yankees when they were in World Series. Roger Craig pitched in World Series, again, guys who were used to Ben, and they brought that attitude with them, and that really helped turn things around as well.
Well, 86 is a big season. Now, you leave after that, and you go to New York, and you get to work with the infamous George Steinbrenner.
Yeah, George didn't hire me, but had the right of approval.
Right.
I was hired by WABC in New York, who had obtained the rights to the Yankee game, and in return they hired me, and they hired Tommy Hutton, who had played in the National League, and I knew him as a player, and it was fun working with him in New York. We worked together for 2 years. And WABC and all the ABC stations that they owned, the radio stations, were sold after my first year there. Sold to an outfit called Capital Cities. And before my second season with the Yankees, we're down at spring training. And I meet with the new general manager of the station. And the first thing he says to Tommy and me, now, let me get this straight. You guys get paid just to do baseball? And I'm thinking to myself, this is not good. Just to do baseball. This is the New York Yankees, the most famous franchise in the history of sports. And I said, well, that's what we were hired to do, was to broadcast the Yankee games. And he said, well, you mean, have you ever given any thought to working in the off season, you know, doing sports shows? And I noticed that he didn't say, you know, when we'll pay you, you know, to do that. Yeah, I think he just assumed that. So I had a feeling I wasn't going to be there much longer. Yeah. And no sooner did the season start, and I start seeing little things in the paper about WABC is looking to down the road to maybe trying to hire Skip Carey from Atlanta, and names are surfacing. And somehow, you talk about being a lucky guy. The middle of that year, I get a call from Jeff Morad, who was my agent. And he said, you'd be interested to know that the Giants have just signed a new deal with KNBR. And I'd had a falling out with the general manager at KNBR. He said, because of the problems that existed when you left, he said, the Giants are now insisting on the rights to hire the announcers themselves and want to know if you'd be interested in coming back. So no one had to twist my arm terribly. I had an off day in August. I flew out here, met with Bob Lurie and Al Rosen, and we worked things out. And that was the end. I came back in 1989 after 2 years in New York. But I'll never forget, we're in Baltimore one night. And again, there was something in the papers and whatever, the New York papers were available in Baltimore, you could read that. And I'm walking in the Yankee clubhouse, and Ricky Henderson, who had, I was sure, didn't have any idea who I was. And at that point, I wasn't sure if he knew who Claudel Washington was, who was playing next to him in center field. But Ricky comes over to me, and he said, you know, and he'd seen this in the paper, things about they're going to replace me. And he says, they messing with you, man? He said, if they're messing with you, you let me know. You know, flabbergasted, you know. We probably hadn't spoken, you know, two sentences all year. You know, Ricky's his own guy, and he does his own thing, and whatever. I'll never forget that as long as I live, how nice that was.
Well, amazing. Well, you come back at the right time in 89.
Well, it was, and I can't reiterate how much I enjoyed the year, that year, but also the 4 years I worked with Ron Fairley.
Oh, yes.
Ron was great to work with because Ron had played the game, had been a good player on great Dodger teams, and had played with great players and against great players. And people love to hear stories. And I was essentially a storyteller. You know, my feeling has always been, you know, it's a stretch, but there's always been, anybody can do the play-by-play, describe. The easiest part is when they hit the ball. Yeah. But it's the time between pitches to make the game interesting. And so my job was to either tell stories that I had or to draw out my partner. And to be able to look at a guy like Fairley and say, well, you must have, you know, you played against a guy like Clemente, who was supposed to have the greatest arm. You know, tell me about Clemente. And he'd tell people, and people now were growing up, young people, were hearing about a guy that they never saw and never would, of course, the great Roberto Clemente. Or he played against Willie Mays or McCovey, or played against Ernie Banks and Billy Williams and you name it, and faced pitchers like Marichal and Bob Gibson. And so the stories were just there, and it was great. And Fairley told me a story about one day when he was at spring training in his, like his first year, second year with the Dodgers. And they're playing an exhibition game against the Boston Red Sox, and Ted Williams was there. And it might have been 60, his Williams' last year. And Williams comes over to him, and Williams always loved to talk to left-hand hitters, and Fairley was there. And he said to Fairley, "Who's the toughest guy for you to face?" And Fairley said, "Well, Juan Marichal. Just can't hit him." And Williams said, "Well, what makes him so tough?" And Fairley said, "I can't hit that screwball." He said, "I just can't hit that screwball that he throws him." And Williams said, "Then why do you swing at it?" He said, Once Marichal knows you can't hit it, he's probably not even throwing it for strikes. Mm-hmm. He said, "You got to figure that out, you know." And it goes back to what I have always felt, and this is a perfect example, is that you can't know hitting until you know pitching, at least to the extent how guys are trying to get you out. And I'm afraid that that doesn't sink in the way it did with a guy like Williams as much today as it should.
Well, he was the greatest hitter. He always wanted to be known as the greatest hitter that ever lived. When they walked down the street, that's what he wanted people to say, and I guess people could say that.
Yeah.
Why not? All right. But 89, there's some famous calls, and again, with Giant history, Russ Hodges, Giants win the pennant, Giants win the pennant. You had that moment in 89 to say the Giants won the pennant for the first time, and 27 years.
Yeah.
And you had Will Clark coming up with a big hit against the Cubs. You had some great calls.
Well, you know, the players have to do it to give you that opportunity. I mean, I'm just there, as I said, to capture the moment. And I remember that night going into the ninth inning of Game 5 of the playoff with the Cubs. And the Giants were up 3-1. And if they didn't end it that day, then they'd have to go back to Chicago for the last two games. And the memories of 87, although I wasn't here, but they still burned deep when the Giants again had a 3-2 lead over the Cardinals going back to St. Louis and lost that series. So you hoped that that wasn't going to present itself, certainly. But when the Clark got the base hit in the eighth inning, off Mitch Williams that drove in two runs and gave the Giants a 3-1 lead. And now you go to the top of the ninth. And I reflect for a moment on a day in June when Al Rosen had completed a deal with the Philadelphia Phillies. And he announced to all of us, "I just got the guy who's going to be on the mound when we win the pennant. I got Steve Bedrosian from the Phillies." So here we are 3 months later, Candlestick Park, ninth inning, Giants leading 3-1, two out, nobody on. The first two batters go out, bang, bang. Drosian gets them out. Next thing you know, three straight singles and a run scores, and it's 3-2. And two men on base, and Ryne Sandberg is at the plate. And I'm thinking to myself, stay calm. Stay calm. Whatever happens is going to be replayed over and over again, and you better get it right. And I'm thinking people have waited 27 years for this, and let's hope it happens. Well, the first pitch, Bedrosian throws him a slider, and Sandberg hits a bouncer to second base that Robbie Thompson gobbles up and throws to first, and that's all I could think of. It's over. You know, 27 years of waiting have come to an end. The Giants have won the pennant.
Yeah, great call. And it really is one of the great calls.